This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour, the part of the program we call The Big Picture. Jim Poplava and John Loeffler here. And this week, the FOMC met and...
So continue as today's actions show to feel that the economy is doing well, is showing resilience. We have a very strong labor market, an unemployment rate that's declined to levels we've not seen since 2001. And even with some moderation in the pace of job growth, we have a labor market that continues to strengthen and policy remains accommodative. So it's important that inflation move up to our 2% objective, as our projections show. We continue to expect that and believe the conditions are in place. But we will monitor incoming data, obviously, and be attentive to rethinking our outlook if it seems appropriate.
That was the voice of Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen after this week's FOMC meeting, where they decided to raise interest rates. It was one of those times, ironically, you know, usually everybody's hanging on what the Fed is going to say. This time, the Fed was overshadowed by other news events, being the shooting at the Republican congressional baseball practice, which everybody, I'm sure, knows about right now. So the Fed was on the back pages. Nevertheless, they did raise interest rates. That makes it for the third time in X number of months, and they have indicated they are ready to do it again. However, the market didn't seem to mind. Stocks were up, bond yields fell. And I guess the question now, Jim, is what does all of this mean since we're beyond what you call three steps and a stumble?
Well, I mean, it was an unusual week. I mean, we saw the blue chips, the Dow hitting a new record this week, while interest rates, actually the day that the Fed raised interest rates, we had the 10-year yield dip down to about 2.1%. But, you know, the one thing that I guess a lot of individuals are now looking at, is the Fed at risk of pursuing a strategy that could lead to trouble ahead? There was just a report out that came out this week on economics on auto sales have peaked and are now in decline and probably should decline the balance of this decade. So the irony of all of this, John, inflation is cooling again at a time the Fed is getting more aggressive. And in fact, when you take a look at some of the minutes that accompanied the meeting, they said their forecast for inflation this year, they're pushing it down. They backed it down a bit. And they said, we're really not going to hit that 2% inflation rate until next year. So here we are. The Fed is raising interest rates, and we'll get into the weeds here shortly with some of the things that they're talking about doing in a situation that is very atypical of what you see in a normal Fed rate raising cycle. The loosening cycle has not been typical. We've seen the Fed do things it's never done before. And just like in this rate raising cycle, it's not very typical at all. We're still in a world where you have major central banks from the Bank of Japan to the European Central Bank that are still doing QE. Now, the ECB hopes to phase out of that and go to taper just like the Fed did when they made that announcement in 2013. But this rate raising cycle is not your typical rate raising cycle. And it's been unusual. And we're seeing a lot of side effects. Once again, the Fed raised interest rates. And the day they did, long-term rates came down. Part of that is money coming into our treasury market because the yield spreads between us and overseas are almost like a chasm right now. They're so wide. But anyway, inflation is heading down. The economy is not overheating. So a lot of this, John, is a lot of people are saying, why are they doing this? Some will say, well, they really need to do this. They need to shrink their balance sheet. They need to raise interest rates so we can sort of normalize whatever that means at this point. I just don't see them getting ever to where they were, let's say, prior to the last downturn when you had the Fed funds rate at 5% before they started to cut them as we went into a recession. I mean, they are lucky. We're at 1.25. And John, it has taken them 4 years to raise rates five times.
Turning to inflation, the 12-month change in the price index for personal consumption expenditures was 1.7% in April. up from less than 1% last summer, but down somewhat over the past few months. Core inflation, which excludes the volatile food and energy categories and tends to be a better indicator of future inflation, has also edged lower. The recent lower readings on inflation have been driven significantly by what appear to be one-off reductions in certain categories of prices, such as wireless telephone services and prescription drugs. These price declines will, as a matter of arithmetic, restrain the 12-month inflation figures until the extraordinarily low March reading drops out of the calculation. However, with employment near its maximum sustainable level and the labor market continuing to strengthen, the committee still expects inflation to move up and stabilize around 2% over the next couple of years, in line with our longer-run objective. Nonetheless, in light of the softer recent inflation readings, the committee is monitoring inflation developments closely.
Yeah, and that was Chairwoman Janet Yellen again, as a matter of fact, talking about the dip in inflation, Jim, which you just mentioned. But, you know, I think we have to ask a question here. If we posit that the typical things that would cause the Fed to get aggressive, say, balance sheet contraction, those things don't exist. So now the question is, why is the Fed doing what they're doing?
Well, typically, when you take a look at the last rate-raising cycle, the one we saw that began in 2004, and the one that began in 1999, and those that preceded that, they were typically done when the economy was overheating, when the growth rates were 3, 4, 5%, inflation was running 5%, when the Fed began to raise interest rates in 2004, we were running at a 4 and 5% inflation rate. So an overheating economy is one reason the Fed would want to raise rates. Two, rising inflation. And three, overheating financial markets. Of those three, John, there's only one that exists today, and that's overheating financial markets. And I would posit the view that if the financial markets were not doing as well as they are right now, especially with the Trump rally that began with President Trump's election, there would have been no rate hike this year. In other words, if we would have began 2017 the way we began 2016, where we went down for six consecutive weeks, and we actually went down the last week in December 2015, there's no way that they would be raising rates. So the market's overheating and the market's doing very well is giving the Fed the leeway to do what they're doing now and to get more aggressive. They're hoping that they can normalize what I call monetary policy. And so that's why they're trying to do this, and the financial markets are overheating. That doesn't mean that they can't go higher. They can, because usually when you get towards a peak in the market, things get really out of line. And as Robin Griffith made a comment in the first hour, this is probably the second most expensive stock market in the history of the markets. So if you want to take a look at why they're doing this, it's not because of economic reasons. It's not because of inflation. It's because, I think, two reasons. One, they would like to normalize monetary policy. And number two, overheating financial markets, because low interest rates breed speculation, which we'll get into in a moment.
Okay, so what we're seeing here is just the opposite of what you think they would be doing, given where we are, because you have a slowing economy, you have falling inflation, and that, by the way, they acknowledged that during the meeting there. So now the question is, are they actually going to be able to do what they're saying, which would be to normalize monetary policy, meaning bringing it up back up to what, 4.5, 5% or something like this? Or is that just a pipe dream in the midst?
You know, the only reason they would be forced to raise interest rates to 4 or 5%, and God help us when they do, would be an overinflationary environment, which I just don't see right now, because there is just so much debt out there. I mean, the federal government has $20 trillion in debt. And consumer debt is back to record levels. Corporate debt is at close to record levels. So they don't want to be out of bullets the next crisis. So they want to have some ammunition. Now, will they be able to get to 2.25? Because if you take a look at what they're projecting another rate hike this year, sometime in the fall or maybe this winter. The best guess right now is December. And then they're also projecting 3 rate hikes for next year. They didn't change any of that. So the Fed is saying right now, hey, we just raised it again, and we see ourselves continuing to pursue this path. In fact, not only are we going to start raising interest rates, but we feel confident enough to start shrinking our balance sheet.
Yeah, and I guess the question here then is, why are they trying to shrink their balance sheet?
Well, it's the same reason they want to raise interest rates, because quantitative easing was one of the main ways they used to bring down long-term interest rates. And they know, just from experience, that we're going to have another recession. They know we're going to have another bear market. So what is going to be their main tool? They would like to shrink their balance sheet somewhat, just like they want to raise interest rates. So, John, they're putting a couple bullets in the chamber, and they want to have something that they can work with in the next downturn.
Yeah, this is a question of chicken or the egg syndrome, because they want to have ammo that they can use during the next downturn. But the question is, do they cause the next downturn by their very actions?
Yeah, you know, which is a catch-22, because they're trying to reload the chambers, but their very actions of reloading the chamber may bring about the event that they are projecting will happen down the road, but it's their own actions that bring it. They never seem to make that connection. And in my entire years in the financial business, I have yet to see them make a, well, I take that back. There's a couple times they made a safe landing, or a soft landing, if you want to call it. But the one that I can think of is 1994, when they doubled the Fed funds rate from 3% to 6% in a single year. Can you imagine them doing something like that today? It would never happen.
Well, back in 2008, they cut interest rates down to zero. As you've often said, that's an historic first. That didn't seem to do it. So then they turned to money printing. Now, what was the purpose of that?
Well, I mean, when you cut interest rates down to zero, how else are you going to affect interest rates? So that's when they began quantitative easing. And the goal was to bring down long-term interest rates, because short-term interest rates were at zero. I mean, if you were in a money market fund or a bank, you got nothing. So their only way to influence long-term interest rates was to go in and heavily buy on the long end of the yield curve, meaning longer dated treasuries and mortgage bonds, in an effort to bring down long-term interest rates, which they were very successful in doing. And what happened as a consequence by bringing down long-term interest rates, mortgage rates fell. And so they revitalized the housing market, because right around 2012, we finally began to pull out of the housing downturn. Housing prices began to rise, housing starts, home sales, all of those things began to rise as mortgage rates got down to incredibly low levels. And unlike the last decade, where you had these kind of funny variable rate loans and sucker loans, you could actually lock in for 15 in 30 years, as you can do right now, at historical rates. And by the way, folks, if you were thinking of buying a home and getting a long-term mortgage, lock in on that mortgage right now. If you can refinance now, because once the Fed starts shrinking its balance sheet and it's not going to be going in the market buying mortgage-backed securities, you're going to start to see mortgage rates start to back up. But the reason they did that, John, is the only tool they had left is interest rates were already at zero on the short end, so there was nothing they could do there. So then they started to influence the long end of the market, which was what they did with quantitative easing.
Well, with another rate raise this week, and this making the third in a row, second this year, you would think that long-term interest rates would be rising, but we didn't seem to get that reaction.
No, we didn't. And I think one reason is, number one, short-term interest rates are now rising here. So if you are an institution, a sovereign investment fund, and you want to park money short-term, the highest place in the world right now is the United States. Heck, our short-term treasuries, two-year notes, are higher than what you can get on 10-year bonds in Europe. And so a lot of money is coming in here because, John, there is a huge chasm between interest rates here and what they are in Europe. And let me just give you an example. On this Friday, we closed with the 10-year note at 2.15. In Germany, interest rates on a 10-year treasury are 0.27, so basically a quarter of a percent. In Japan, they are 0.05 of a percent. They're not even 0.1% in Japan. In the UK right now, they're about 1%. And in Italy, who would have thought this? In Italy, they're 1.95. So Italian interest rates, which their balance sheet, they have more balance sheet problems over there. is less than what you can get on a 10-year treasury. So the Fed is raising interest rates while other major central banks, from the ECB to, let's say, the Bank of Japan and others, are still in the process of money printing, while we're in the process of actually tightening in two ways now as a result of the announcement that they're going to start shrinking their balance sheet. So that's one of the reasons why you've seen rates actually fall this week, because interest rate differentials are more attractive for foreigners to invest here.
So I guess if we sum up this week's meeting, it was probably significant. We'd label it as that because there was a major change in what the Fed says it's ready to do. But now let's get into it and examine in depth what we think the implications of that are, item by item.
Well, let's start with the obvious. The first thing they did was they raised the Fed funds rate a quarter of a point, and they raised it to, so it's now 1.25%. You're seeing that reflected in two-year Treasury notes. And they also prepared the market. They said, hey, we're not done. We're still on course here, and we see one more rate hike coming this year and three more rate hikes coming next year. And the other thing that they did is they got specific in terms of what they plan to do in shrinking their balance sheet. Now, remember, since December of last year, they've been talking about shrinking their balance sheet. This time, what they wanted to really avoid here, John, was having a taper tantrum like they did in May of 2013 when Bernanke said, oh, by the way, we're going to stop printing money. And the markets reacted. During that period of time, the 10-year yield actually doubled in a six-month period, and there was chaos in the bond market. So they want to avoid that. So they announced specific plans on how they want to do this. So what they're trying to do is avoid any disruption in the markets. I simply don't think they're going to be able to do that. But nonetheless, that's what they're trying to do. And by doing that, it is another form of tightening. So folks, warning, caveat emptor, the Fed is getting more aggressive here. They're not only raising interest rates, but they're also shrinking their balance sheet, which means as bonds come due, they will not roll them over. And that means that liquidity will be withdrawn from the market. And markets have been fueled in float on a sea of liquidity.
Let me now turn to our balance sheet. As I noted in our policy statement, we are continuing to maintain the size of our balance sheet by reinvesting proceeds from maturing Treasury securities and principal payments from agency debt and mortgage-backed securities. Provided that the economy evolves broadly as the committee anticipates, we currently expect to begin implementing a balance sheet normalization program this year. Consistent with the principles and plans we released in 2014, this program would gradually decrease our reinvestments and initiate a gradual and largely predictable decline in our securities holdings. The addendum to our policy normalization principles and plans that we released today provides further information. For both Treasury and agency securities, we will reinvest proceeds from our holdings only to the extent that they exceed gradually rising caps on the reductions in our security holdings. Initially, these caps will be set at relatively low levels, $6 billion per month for Treasuries and $4 billion per month for agencies. So any proceeds exceeding those amounts would be reinvested. These caps will gradually rise over the course of a year to maximums of $30 billion per month for Treasuries and $20 billion per month for agency securities, and will remain in place through the normalization process. By limiting the volume of securities that private investors will have to absorb as we reduced our holdings, the caps should guard against outsized moves in interest rates and other potential market strains. As I previously noted, when our securities holdings begin to gradually decline, so too will the supply of reserve balances in the banking system. At some point, probably a few years down the road, the committee will bring the decline in our balance sheet to an end as the quantity of reserves is normalized. My hope and expectation is that when we decide to go forward with this plan, that there will be very little reaction to it, that it's clear how we intend to proceed, and that this is something that will just run quietly in the background over a number of years, leading to a reduction in the size of our balance sheet and in the outstanding stock of reserves, and that it's something that the committee will not be reconsidering from time to time. We think this is a workable plan, and it will, as one of my colleagues, President Harker, described it, it'll be like watching paint dry, that this will just be something that runs quietly in the background.
Well, there once again, you have Janet Yellen talking about balance sheet reductions, but I have to comment on her comment about watching paint dry, that it'll be totally boring. Usually when the Fed does something, it blows things up. It's anything but boring when the results begin showing.
No, as witness to what we saw and went through between 2007. But what was rather interesting here, and they're trying to do something, and you got to remember, they've been prepping and prepping and prepping the markets. What changed with this meeting? They got specific. So when they get specific, folks, that means they're serious. They're going through with something. If they were sort of, well, you know, we're looking at it and, you know, we'll have to throw out words of what happens with the economy. No, this time they came out and they said specific. They are going to shrink when they begin, and they'll do it in quarterly increments, roughly $10 billion a month, $6 billion in treasuries, $4 billion in mortgages. And then every quarter, they're going to increase that amount, starting out with $10 billion. At the end of 3 months, that will go to $20 billion. At the end of 3 months, so in a nine-month period of time, they hope to be shrinking their balance sheet by $30 billion a month. On an annual basis, that's about $360 billion. That's equivalent to one full percentage point increase in interest rates. So not only are they pursuing raising the federal funds rate, but they're also pursuing raising or shrinking the size of their balance sheet. That means, and when they get to 9 months from the start, that means $30 billion a month less in buying. And John, that starts to become significant. And so what they really did here is they got specific. They said, okay, we're telling the market, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to begin. We're going to begin gradually, which the market likes, rather than a stiff jolt. They're basically saying, we're going to do this gradually and see how it works. But what they really want to avoid right now, especially with stocks where they are, the economy weak, inflation declining, the last thing they want is a crash in the financial markets or an end. They want to tap down the speculation in the market. We'll get into speculation next here, but they are tiptoeing in trying as much as they can to hopefully calm the markets as they begin this process.
Yeah, and if you look at the fact that the Fed's balance sheet is, what, $4.6 trillion? If they're going to shrink it gradually, this could go on for years. So maybe it will be like watching paint dry. I don't know.
Well, it may start out watching paint dry, but then I got a feeling at some point it's going to be a thunderstorm. You know, we have a saying, they keep doing something until something breaks. And they sort of hinting at that. Well, we're going to go ahead and do this. We raised interest rates. We still plan on doing more. And by the way, we're going to start shrinking our balance sheet. But then there's that little caveat at the end. And they go, as long as the market or the economy continues to perform as expected is the new word. So they still project three additional rate hikes in 2018, which would take the Fed funds rate roughly to about 2.25 if they don't break something before that happens. So they want to reduce the balance sheet because they know QE is going to be their main tool. I mean, John, I really doubt if they get up to 2.25. And if interest rates are only 1.5 or 1.75 before this economy breaks down, or 2%, whatever that number turns out to be, is lowering interest rates from 2% down to 0 again really going to do it? No. What they're going to have to do is once again come in with quantitative easing. And it's going to have to be massive this time. And don't forget, if Washington comes up with a fiscal spending program, but it doesn't seem like nothing much is happening there other than bickering, if they come in with some kind of infrastructure program or tax cut or something like that, then the deficits could mushroom, which would lend itself to the Fed quantitative easing, because the government would spend the money, issue the bonds, and the Fed would just simply print and mop it up through quantitative easing. And that's probably what we're going to see in the next downturn.
Well, I guess we have to bring that famous question back to the program. What does this mean for investors? Because, well, we know that, for example, when they do things like this, they do it until something goes kaput. But nevertheless, the markets are setting new records and bond yields are down. So what does all this mean?
Well, I mean, eventually, as the Fed buys less and less with their shrinking the balance sheet, eventually this is going to start to raise interest rates. And once again, if you are thinking of buying a new home, refinancing your home, this is the time you want to lock in on 15-year or 30-year mortgages, depending on what you're looking at. Because right now, foreigners are pouring money into our market right now, and that's keeping the long end of the treasury market down, which is what you saw happen this week. But right now, eventually, foreign central banks, the ECB, is heading towards taper, which means rates are going to start to rise in Europe. They've already risen from the very lows that we saw, record lows of last summer. And eventually, maybe the Bank of Japan will probably start doing the same thing. So foreigners right now are keeping our markets down. But as they begin to do their own tightening, then there's going to be less foreign buying of our treasuries, because we might be heading into trouble at that point, and then the Fed will have to reverse itself.
You know, it's hard to believe that we're over 2% here in the United States on interest rates, but Germany's at only 0.25%. And it's sort of a deja vu. Remember going back to Paul Volcker back in the 1970s during his raising with the spread between the U.S. and Europe at that time?
Yeah, very similar. I mean, obviously, we're nowhere near the kind of rates that we saw at the end of the 70s. But by comparison, they're probably even more significant. I mean, when you take, as you just mentioned, German bond yields, a little over 0.25%, and ours are over 2%. I mean, that's significant. That is almost 8 times higher. And so there wasn't as much of a percentage spread difference as there is today. But here's the problem. As a result of these low interest rates, either on the short end or even on the long end, and especially where we've gone from last year, the bond spreads have narrowed considerably. When I say bond spreads, that's the difference between the yield on a corporate bond, junk bond, and sovereign debt like the U.S. Treasuries. And that's because there's a yield frenzy that's going on right now as investors chase yield globally. Because, I mean, pension funds, insurance companies have to look for yield, because where are you going to get it? And so everybody is scrambling trying to find a rate of return, because globally, central banks have shrunk or reduced the yield on bonds across the globe. And so what this has done is investors are bidding up the price of bonds, and speculation is coming into this market. In fact, the drop in yields is setting off this frenzy, and one of the latest risky asset classes is in something that we call leveraged loans. Retail investors are piling into the sector up to $95 billion, not quite to the record we were in 2014. And the reason this is happening is borrowing costs have declined here and abroad. So risky companies, those companies that are marginal, they have high financial risk of default, are taking advantage of lower yields to issue debt or roll over their existing debt at lower rates. So you can't blame them. So a lot of companies that wouldn't exist today are existing because of these low yields. And the number one type of popular investment right now are these risky loans, because they pay interest rates that are higher than what you can get in, let's say, investment grade bonds. Yields can get as high as 5%. Well, if you take a 5% yield and you compare that to, let's say, a 2% treasury, that's 150% more higher rate of return. And John, what's happening is people are just chasing yields, and it's institutions. And here's something that is, you're seeing a similar pattern. And when you have a loan, or you make a loan, there's usually some kind of covenant provisions that the lenders put in to protect themselves. For example, if you're late on an interest payment, if your balance sheet deteriorates, in other words, they can initiate foreclosure, because the loans are secured usually by property or some kind of asset. And so there's these covenants. But because the competition is so severe, we've gone to what is called covenant light. very similar to what we saw happen between 2005 and 2007, when you had in 2007, 30% of all U.S. loans and 10% of European loans were covenant light. And we are very close to approaching that period today. And John, there's money that continues to pour in this area. And it's just like anything else. What happens when a lot of money comes into the area? It drives up the price. In this case, it drives up the price of the bonds, which drives down the yield. You know, I just want to end on this, because in retail investors, especially those that are retired, are looking for yield, caveat emptor, because this is a high risk investment. And bear in mind, we are in a Fed rate raising cycle, because sooner or later, this party is going to end as the Fed takes away the punch bowl.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized investment portfolio.
You know, Financial Sense News Hour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense News Hour, featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
The genome you can think of as an information system. You know, it's several gigabytes of information, and no human can sit down and read all of that. It's something for a computer to do. And you're exactly right. There is interest in machine learning, deep learning. A lot of those folks in academia and in industry are getting interested in thinking of biology and biotechnology as a computational and informatic based system. When I think of where this field is at in a historical context, I think we are basically at the level of Model Ts. We are right at the very beginning of some really awesome technology that one can anticipate in the next decade.
Welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour and the Big Picture. Jim Poplava and John Loeffler here. As a number of our technicians have acknowledged, we're starting to see divergences in the stock market. First of all, between blue chip stocks and some of their smaller brethren. And in the last segment of the show, we talked about the Fed taking away the punch bowl. So, beginning this fall, probably what we're going to see is that liquidity will be in a process of being withdrawn from the market. And this is a heads up type of thing, because when divergences abound, technicians will say something is afoot.
Well, I mean, our standard thesis, if you've been listening to the program, is they will keep raising until they break something. If you take a look at Fed history, historically, predictably, they crash the airplane. And so now the Fed is getting more confident. They've raised interest rates 5 times now. They've taken us from 0 to 1.25. And so far, there hasn't been very many disruptions. We had a few last year when they raised rates for the first time in December of 2015. This stock market went down for 6 weeks in a row, and they've sort of backed off until December of last year. But since December, they raised rates. Raised them again in March. Nothing happened. The stock market continues to hit new records. So basically, John, they're going to keep doing this until something happens. Either you're going to see it happen in the economy. In other words, the Fed has got to say, wait a minute, the economy is barely growing and inflation is not where our target rate is. Why are they doing this? And they're doing it because the stock market is going up, which is allowing them to do that. I guarantee you, you get a 10 to 15% correction in the stock market, watch how quickly the language changes at a Fed FOMC meeting. So what we are seeing now are divergences that are telling us the road ahead, there's trouble on the horizon. It's like a barometer that starts to drop. And you're seeing this reflected in the divergences that we're seeing in the stock market. Because when things get risky, I mean, we're talking about the Fed. We're not the only one that knows that when the Fed starts raising interest rates, there's trouble further down the line. Trouble for companies, trouble for the economy, trouble for consumers. And so what happens is as we move in that direction, and you typically see this before a correction or a bear market, money starts to gravitate with the generals. And the generals are your large blue chip stocks. And so that's why you're seeing the Dow up more than the other averages this year, especially when you compare the Dow to the S&P or even the Russell. So investors are moving into large caps, and this is really a reflection of safety. So they're moving up the safety ladder because they're saying, look, I'd rather be in a consumer staple company, a utility company, or something that I don't have to worry about if the economy starts to slow down, or God forbid, we get into another recession. So that's warning number one. Warning number two is this narrowing of credit spreads. It's kind of like the VIX. When you see the VIX get down to real low level, or you see credit spreads narrow as they've been doing here since the beginning of the year, that is usually telling you at some point we have troubles down the line.
And if we assume that there is trouble down the line, where would we expect to see it pop up first?
You know, John, the bond market guys always get it right. So if you take a look at the trouble that we went through in 2016 with the stock market, it was preceded from probably about September of 2015 to December. Credit spreads blew wide open. I mean, junk bond spreads got between 6% or more above treasury yields. Corporate bond spreads got higher. And so the trouble will begin in the bond market. So if you want a barometer and you want to watch something for signs of trouble, watch the credit markets, because that's where the trouble is going to show up first. It'll start to show up in junk bonds. And that's why we talked about in the last segment about these leveraged loans, that you have a lot of retail money going into these kind of funds that become very popular. Because, I mean, anybody that's shopping for a bond fund, people shop, they don't look at what the fund is actually investing in. What they're doing is they're looking at, oh, this fund pays 5%. Well, that's better than this one that pays 4%, or this one that pays 3%. They're not looking at risk. And these are the areas where it will surface first. So if there's trouble on the horizon, you should keep your eye on the bond market, because that will be our first telltale signs that we're heading for trouble.
And right now?
Right now, credit spreads continue to narrow, so there's no signs of trouble on the horizon, which tells me the stock market could still head higher. And there's just a lot of money, John. There's a lot of money chasing yields. As we talked in the last segment, there's $200 billion that's going to go into the lending market of these risky loans. And what that's going to do is drive the yields down even further. But eventually, as these yields go lower, lower, and lower, the credit markets will start to sniff a downturn in economic growth. And because the reason you want to watch that, and that's why we're paying close attention to our LEIs right now, is when the LEIs start to roll over, that tells investors the economy is slowing down. And when the economy slows down, what does that translate into? Slower economic growth, slower sales, lower profits. And eventually, if it keeps going in that direction, in other words, if the Fed persists, despite that, because right now, that one clip that we played in the last segment, where they said, hey, the economy's doing well, inflation is moderate, we're not worried about anything right now. And so they will continue to do something until it's usually too late. And, you know, right now they're looking through the rearview mirror instead of looking through the front window.
If we're looking at the fact that credit spreads have narrowed, what should bond investors do then?
I would say right now is the time to start switching to quality, because what you don't want to do, and usually it'll happen, it'll be some kind of event, it'll be an economic report, it'll be something, and all of a sudden you'll see yields spike. And then when yields spike, that changes the charts. And when that changes the charts, and all of a sudden money rotation starts to happen, and you don't want to get caught in that. So right now, if you are in high risk stuff, if you are getting 5%, unless you're getting an adjustable rate loan on high quality debt, it's time to start switching to quality. Because remember, the markets go through something that we call a topping process. They don't ring a bell. It's not going to happen in a single day, and it's going to happen over time. But eventually, the stock market is going to peak. And usually, things get crazy just before the peak. People are paying ridiculous prices for stocks. They're paying ridiculous prices for, let's say, high-risk bonds as they're doing now. And people are just having this rosy feeling that the good times are going to last forever and everything looks great right now. They don't see the trouble that's ahead. And that's usually typically as you get into this topping process. What we do know is the Fed is turning up the heat. So eventually, trouble will eventually arrive.
Well, we know looking forward, we have more economic and earnings information around the corner coming up in July. That's one of the things out there. But this week, the big event, will they or won't they? They will. There's more tightening going on at the Fed. We've jumped over that hurdle. So looking forward, what are the things coming across the horizon?
Probably the next thing that we're going to have to get through is corporate earnings season. Q2 will end here shortly in the next 2 weeks. And so any company that's going to miss their earnings, haven't seen too much downgrades lately. So I don't expect that. I think probably second quarter looks pretty good from a corporate earnings point of view, but that's what we're going to be looking at in the month of July. But the thing that we want to really follow here is the LEIs and what they're telling us about the economy, because if we are going to see some tightening and we're going to see a slowdown as rates rise. Now, remember, if you are borrowing short term, a prime lending rate, well, your rates just went up this week. And so we're going to be looking for clues in the economy, John. And I would suspect we could get a nice, nice rally in the stock market in the month of July if corporate earnings come out as robust as they did in the first quarter. So all of that in the months ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense News Hour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.